It's time for Squawk Talk, talking business to business. Squawk Talk highlights business and business owners in the Atlanta area. Squawk Talk is brought to you by Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration.
Well, good afternoon. We're broadcasting live from the Eagle's Nest in the heart of Atlanta. Welcome to Squawk Talk, where we talk business to business. I'm your host, Kate Skirmerhorn with Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration. We have a very special edition today of Squawk Talk. We have a panel discussion talking about issues that face property managers, property owners, and tenants alike. So let's take a minute to get to know our panel of experts. Joining us first is Gary Lee from Academy Properties. Welcome, Gary.
Great. Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about your company and what you do.
Well, we are located on the south side of Atlanta. We've been together for about 6 years, and we handle what we call scattered single family, which is a single family resident or home. In some cases, duplexes on the south side of Atlanta. Anything I-20 and south, we can take care of for you.
Very good. Our next guest is David Lawler from the law offices of David Lawler. David, welcome.
Hi, Kate. How are you today?
Very well. David, give us a little aspect of the kind of law that you practice for us.
Well, I'm a general practitioner with an office in the Hamilton Mill area of North Gwinnett. A general practitioner wears a lot of different hats, and some of the hats I wear include that of the adoption attorney. I do a little bit of auto accident claims, business formations, transactions, civil litigation, criminal defense, divorce, and family law. And boy, that's an ever popular field. Landlord tenant, real estate, and I do a little bit of estate planning as well. So lots of different hats.
Very good. And our final guest today is Michael McCreary from McCreary Realty Management. Welcome, Michael.
Thank you, Kate, for having me on. I appreciate it very much, and very pleased to be here with these illustrious gentlemen as well. Our firm is specializes in leasing and managing scattered site single family houses in Cobb and South Cherokee County. We've been in business for over 23 years, but I'm part of a family business that's been in Cobb County in real estate since the mid 50s. That's 1950s for those that are still in high school. We've been doing it a long time, and I'm third generation in the family business, and now I have two daughters working with me, fourth generation. So we're just keeping on ticking.
Very good. Very good. All right. Well, let's get our topics to start it off today. I'll throw you the big softball, hardball question for the day. Why would somebody want to use a professional property management company?
Everybody's looking at me, so I guess I'll start. But, I've been a real estate broker for over 16 years. And, in being in real estate, there's a lot of training and a lot of things you need to know the ins and outs of. And even then, getting into property management years back, there's a lot of tricks of the trade that, a single owner that deals with his one property might can get away with day to day. But there's a lot of stuff that if you don't know and you don't catch, you can lose money, damage to your property, or end up even losing the property.
Or some cold-blooded attorney come after you.
Well, that's true.
Yes, and we enjoy the fact that you get to make a living, but we'd rather you not off of us and our clients.
Hey, I understand completely.
But I think one of the primary reasons why people want to have a professional property manager is that no matter how easy it looks, no matter the fact that you can go online and download forms and procedures and figure things out, it's never as easy as it looks. Mm-hmm. People have to hold people accountable. We can't do handshakes. When I first started working with my parents in 82, our original lease was a single letter-sized page typed on a IBM Selectric typewriter.
Stone and chisel.
Exactly. And you just could count on people doing the right thing. And that's just not the case anymore. Everybody comes to the cult with different cultures, different definitions of simple words like clean, on time.
Is,
exactly. You name
normal
it.
Normal wear and tear. Normal. That's the great one.
Exactly. So consequently, most owners aren't up for those battles. And so I feel like our biggest job is to protect the owners from themselves. They want to be too kind to residents. They want to not file evictions until the rent's 6 months late instead of a few days late. Mm-hmm. So they don't run it like a business. We come in and we make it a business for them and help them guide them along those ways.
I think that's an excellent point, is that so many people that are landlords regarding a house that they themselves previously owned. So there's an emotional attachment to that. And the experience of a management company, it can't be understated, because these gentlemen have – in this case, three generations of experience and 16 years of experience of what to do, what not to do. And you never, ever, ever want to have a house that you have an emotional attachment to form your learning curve, okay? Because there are 1,000 things that could go wrong, and at least 800 of them will at some point. And when you've got somebody that's got the expertise, the professionalism, and the emotional detachment of a management company, it is so worth the fee to get all of those headaches out of your head and onto these guys. Because you know what? They're not going to lose sleep over it. They're going to make a non-emotional business decision that best reflects the landlord's desire. Because landlords, especially on their own houses, they just get too tied up into it.
Well, let's tag on that a little bit. How do you help that homeowner that is maybe the reluctant landlord that finds themselves in a position either they can't sell the house or for whatever reason they need to move out of their house, but they're not giving it up? How do you help them make that transition into it being now a business?
I'll take it first, if that's okay with you, Gary. For us, we take the position of educating owners. We want them to learn how to be good landlords. And most people think they know, but they really don't know. So we're in there to save them from themselves, to educate them, and to make certain that it's run like a business. And we teach them how to run it like a business, teach them how to financially prepare for vacancies and unexpected expenses and things, help them understand the difference between a tenant being occupying the property and an owner occupying the property. Risk management is a huge part of our job in helping owners understand what you can and can't do, what you must do, and when you must do it, and that you don't have a choice. You can make a decision to not repair your dishwasher in your house, Kate, for 6, 7, 8 weeks and hand wash. You can't do that when you're renting out a property to somebody. It's no longer the family home. It's the family business. It's a commercial enterprise. You've got to make certain that you take care of that in a timely manner, or you're just going to really make life miserable for yourself.
I think you're kind of right with that emotional detachment, because you do have a lot of people these days that, you know, they're kind of taking advantage of the market to move up, and their current property is so underwater. And, you know, mom and dad at their wedding gave them this tree. They planted it in the yard, and then all of a sudden they, right, they drive by, and the tenant has pruned it back too far or whatever, and I didn't want it pruned that way. I wanted it pruned in the shape of a star, whatever the case may be. And you're not just talking about a property manager that's, you know, managing that property. You're talking about someone that has to have the experience to mediate between that owner and that tenant and educate the tenant along with that homeowner, or now that landlord, of what you can and can't do, how you can do it, and if you do it the wrong way, what's going to happen. And a lot of times you've got to slap a hand, and sometimes you have to lead someone. So that emotional detachment is a lot of it.
Well, Michael, you said a phrase that just rung true when you said we often save them from themselves. I cannot tell you how many times I've had a landlord come in or any type of a client come in with a contract, and they say, hey, I want you to review this contract. And I turn to the last page, and they've already signed it. It's like, okay, you're bound by everything in here. Okay.
And there's so many loopholes in it.
Absolutely.
It's unbelievable.
Absolutely. I saw a contract the other day that a landlord brings to me, and he's like, well, what are the pitfalls on this? And I turn and I say, okay, well, we've got an early termination provision where this client can terminate this lease, which is a 10-year lease. Okay, I know, 10 years. I don't get it. All right, 10 years.
Wow.
With a lease, and it's a lease purchase. Okay. And you should see Michael out there in Radio Land. Michael is, I gave him the headache we were telling him how to avoid. Okay, so this had an early termination provision that the client only had to be current on rent, give a 30-day notice, and a $50 bill. And he buys his way out of the lease.
Out of a 10-year obligation that's worth over $100,000.
Exactly,
sure.
Exactly. And I said, yeah, you signed this. That's okay, really, really bad idea. So management companies and good attorneys can help save you from yourselves, people.
Well, that kind of goes back to that old saying is, I will buy anything from you at your price with my terms. A dollar a month for a million years? Well, great. I'm dead long before that, and I've got the use of that property and turn it back over to you, and it's trashed, and that's a dollar a month. I mean, so, yeah, terms are a big thing.
And, in fact, I was just speaking with a property manager yesterday who is taking a client, a tenant, to court as part of eviction process because they did not read all the terms of their lease, and they were violating countless numbers of provisions that were in the lease. So certainly there's issues beyond that. So let's tag on that. What do you do when you find tenants that are maybe violating terms of the lease but not just – you didn't pay the rent, what are some other things that could cause a tenant to be processed for eviction?
Well, there's a lot of things depending on the terms of the lease and what lease you use, because in our field, you can use a Georgia Association of Realtor lease, which I use, but there's a lot of companies that have attorneys that draft their own leases. Mike, I think you use your own lease?
That's correct.
Right. So depending on his terms, they're going to be different from mine. But depending on the severity of that problem is if I'll give you a notice to fix it, and then after that, I will fix it for you, or I'll take you to court and free up your residential future.
Every lease is going to have any well-written lease anyway. We'll have a whole section that will say these events are default events that can trigger an instant eviction. I love the Georgia Association of Realtor forms for a lot of situations, most situations, in fact. My lease that I draft that I recommend for clients to use in certain circumstances has a lot of really, you know, good default provisions that are not in the standard GAR form. For example, if one of the tenants is convicted of a drug offense, that's a default, and because you don't want the house to become a drug house.
Right.
So, and that's not in the GAR form. But things like that, you know, it could be anything from keeping a pet on the premises without disclosing it, or mm-hmm. even, you know, I've seen some lease provisions that have if you have overnight guests more than 10 days a month, things like that. There was this one landlord I used to work with over in Cumming all the time that his leases actually had in there there would be no alcohol consumed on the premise at all. And hey,
I'd be thrown out.
Hey, I'm a member of a bar association. Okay? I pass, you know, I pass one bar and I stop at all the others. But the but I said, how do you get away with that? And he basically said, you know, it's a freedom of contract issue. I mean, there's no legal impediment to it. But what was remarkable about it is all of his tenants were very long term. He'd never had late payments. The people were model tenants all the way across the board, and he just made it up front clear to them that if he, you know, was over there and he saw beer cans in their trash, bam, eviction's coming. So yeah, it worked for him.
Well, there's a couple of common things that we've already been touched on: pets, occupants, probably lawn maintenance is a mm-hmm. huge one, mm-hmm. but because
HOA violations,
and then HOA violations, exactly. Those are the biggest ones because those can actually turn into dollar fines against the property owner, even though the property owner is not living in the property anymore.
Yeah, HOA liens can be very nasty.
Yes, and the way you get rid of them is you pay them.
That's the only way to get rid of them.
Exactly. I happen to manage homeowners associations as well. We manage approximately 35 associations, almost 3,000 homes across the north end of Atlanta. And our primary product there is detached single-family communities.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, you've been listening to Squawk Talk with our expert panel of guests today. We're discussing issues that face property managers, property owners, and tenants. Our panel of guests today is Michael McCreary from McCreary Realty Management, David Lawler from the law offices of David Lawler, and Gary Lee from Academy Properties. So let's go on to a little bit. You mentioned it a little bit about fines and things. What responsibilities does the homeowner have once they have hired a property management company? It doesn't just stop with, okay, now you've got the keys. You go with it. What kind of responsibilities do the homeowners have to still take ownership of, even though you're managing the property for them?
They have to keep the property adequately insured at all times. Big one. Big one. It amazes me how many landlords think that once they turn it over to a management company that that they don't have to insure it, or just because the tenant may have their contents insured. But when it comes to premises liability, there are a lot of plaintiff's attorneys out there that would just love to come after those landlords and their insurance, you know, if the tenant slips and falls. it's still that owner's responsibility. So number one, above all, keep it insured and keep the mortgage payments made.
Well, yeah. One thing I'd like to say, too, kind of on the back of that insurance advertisement there.
This brought to you by Liberty Mutual State Farm. Farmers.
As a property manager, we actually like to see on that insurance through the owner, or if the tenant has their own insurance, the property management company put as an additional insured, mm-hmm. just because for a couple of reasons. One, there's no extra cost to either party, so it doesn't cost anyone to do that, except for the insurance companies now will talk to me as the property manager if there's a fire or if there's a someone breaking in the property and things like that. I have to speak to my insured. No, I'm an additional insured. You can talk to me, and then I can get the process done quicker, because that owner especially is going to turn around and look at me and say, well, what are you going to do about it? Well, I can't do anything about it because I can't speak to your insurance company, and plus it does cover us a little bit in case someone falls on the property or someone gets hurt and things like that. So,
well, speaking from the attorney's point of view, that is an excellent, excellent point that Mr. McCreary is making, because when the lawsuit comes, do you want me to call you Michael or Mr. McCreary?
That would be Gary.
I'm sorry. I'm looking right at the
right. Yeah, apologize. Yeah, got the name tag right there.
Like I said, member of the Bar Association, past one bar.
Remember the three generations, the old guy with the white hair? Yeah. That's Mike.
Yes.
He's got more hair than I do, so I'm not going to make fun of hair on this issue.
I don't care what color it is, as long as it holds on for dear life.
Just checking.
I'm sorry. Yeah. It's water, I promise. Okay, but what Gary was saying about the additional insured, if I'm representing a plaintiff and there's been a personal injury, I have to sue any and everybody that is connected at all to that house. So I'm naming that management company as a defendant. And if they've got insurance, that's a lot better for them.
Right. And the nice thing about that is that it puts both us and the owner on the same side and with the same defense. And it cuts everybody's cost. It makes it a lot easier. I'm not just defending myself and my actions. I'm defending the owner and their choices as well, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And it makes us a united front in dealing with it. One of the other things that owners need to do is they need to maintain the property. They're required by state law, under Georgia landlord-tenant law, to maintain the property in what's called tenable condition. And tenable has been defined by case law basically to mean it's supposed to work like it's supposed to work like. So if it's a six-year-old dishwasher, it's supposed to work like, clean like, sound like, look like, and operate like a six-year-old dishwasher, not brand-new condition. And the owner has an obligation to repair in a timely manner upon proper notice from tenants. One of the things that's unique, and David can speak more about this, about tenant law, landlord-tenant law in Georgia, is that of all the laws in the state, it's one with the most codifications of provisions. And it takes a lot of flexibility out of the judges and attorneys' hands in the fact that it says you must do this, and it specifically outlines what you must do. And for example, when we return security deposits, we have five steps we have to take, and they have to be done in a specific order during a specific time frame. We can do all five of them, but do them out of order or miss the time frame, we've lost our ability to keep the deposit on behalf of the owner. And most owners, when they do landlording themselves, mess up this part. They don't get a move-in inspection report signed by everyone, and they mishandle the deposit on the back end. Pardon me. So what ends up happening is, in fact, even with our real estate professionals, the number one complaint against real estate professionals right now is over security deposits and financial dealings with the property owners. Mm-hmm. It's replaced earnest money deposits and sales contract issues as the top two complaints in the real estate commission.
Well, one of the things, too, that I see with owners is when they want to replace an item, that nice stainless steel built-in microwave that's over the stove that was put in 1990 goes out. Well, I'm just going to go to Walmart and buy a little white one for $50 and put it on the counter. Can't do that. Yeah. It's got to be like or better. You've got to replace with the same thing. You can't come in there and that side-by-side refrigerator put in this little cheap $40 one from BrandSmart.
Well, not at the same rent anyway.
Yes. Oh, no, not at all. Not at all. Yeah. So,
hey, that comes back to there's no objection, price won't conquer.
Right, there you go.
I like that.
That's one thing that part of the training that we have to do with our owners, especially the ones that are not investors that are doing one house because they're moving up in the market or whatever the case may be, is that you can't come in here and do it cheap now because you're not there. Even though you did granite countertops when you were there, you still have to keep that same type of luxury in that house.
Because that's what the people are renting.
Correct.
Correct.
That's why.
Maybe that granite countertop is why they were renting.
Exactly. Exactly.
Precisely. Now, you can make those kind of changes between tenants, but you can't do it while it's occupied.
No.
Exactly. No. Yeah. If you want to harvest the good appliances and put in the Walmart version, make sure you do it between clients.
But let your property manager know that before you do it.
Because we might have other choices that they should make.
Well, especially...
You may have ads out there listing it.
Exactly. I'm advertising granite countertops, stainless steel appliances. I get over there and it's linoleum.
It's melamine. White. What are you talking about? It's melamine.
Yeah, it's Walmart sticker on the side. Yeah, that don't work.
Right. Let's talk a little bit about preventative maintenance in terms of whose responsibility is it? Does the tenant have some responsibility in preventative maintenance? Does the property management company manage the property maintenance? Or does the homeowner, will they be allowed to go in while a tenant is occupying a property and to handle some preventative maintenance on the property?
Well, the lease will actually say that. Every lease should have provisions in there that say this type of maintenance is going to be done by the tenant, this type of maintenance is going to be done by the landlord, and often it's a dollar threshold. For example, one I just recently saw was any appliance repair or replacement above $1,000 is the responsibility of the landlord. Anything under $1,000 was the tenant. That was a unique lease.
Gary, your eyebrows just went about five feet in the air.
I'm going to let Mike touch this one.
Well, our experience is that with one-year leases, because that's a completely different category in landlord-tenant law, you cannot abdicate away the tenant's right to have the landlord take care of repairs. So to impose upon the tenant any repair cost that's ordinary, normal wear and tear, normal breakage, that kind of thing, it just wore out, you can't do that. Now, you can charge them all day long for tenant damage, and we do that. We went out recently to for a garbage disposal, and we pulled coins out of it. We did another time where we pulled the fish rocks out of it when they cleaned the aquarium.
Golly.
And that kills the either killed it and we had to replace it, or they had to pay for the repair cost. And those things are outlined in the lease. One of the things that you'll find with a lot of real estate-related questions is it always begins with, it depends. And it always depends upon the agreements, and it depends upon the circumstances. And that's one of the things that really keeps it interesting 35 years later in managing single-family homes, is that they're all unique. Everything is. It's not like I have 300 apartments where I have 102 bedrooms, 103 bedrooms, and 104 bedrooms, and they all have the same model dishwasher and range, and they have all that commonality. We have absolutely complete lack of commonality in managing the scattered site single family houses, different ages, different appliances and brands and models and quality and care and such. So tenants have some preventative maintenance that are in most leases, such as changing filters, maintaining lawns, keeping the yard trash-free and clean and free of debris, complying with local ordinances, which can include...
no meth labs.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, your basic stuff like that. Yes, exactly. No grow houses and things like that. Yes.
No forestry.
Yes. Yes,
or creative forestry. Yes,
right. But, kind of just don't get off on that, please.
Family-friendly, fellas.
Right. With what Mike is saying, though, it really it does depend, just because, depending on the terms of your lease and, two, what preventive maintenance needs to be done. If it is grass cutting, yes, that's going to be the tenant. But then again, if the house needs to be pressure washed, that's the owner. Mm-hmm. So when you get that HOA letter, which you will every week, especially if Mike manages, you get them every other day. It really depends on what's going on and who that's going to be sent to, because I got a letter the other day, not from Mike's company. I'm on the south side. He doesn't manage the yards. But we have a letter that we were going to get fined if we didn't remove the water hose from curled up on the driveway and move it to the side of the house, which is about 2 feet. Yeah, I know. They sent me a letter. So we called.
Signed by Herman Goering.
Yeah. So we call the tenant, and they're like, okay. So they threw it in the side of the yard and everything was fine. But that's that's what the HOA considers preventive maintenance. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it really just depends on what's going on.
Right. And because every property is unique in age and amenity, it just is always interesting. And that's one of the reasons we have great property management software to manage all of this varied information so that we can actually answer questions instead of going, let me go pull the file when I get back to the office 3 hours from now.
Right.
We're listening to Squawk Talk, and today we're listening to an expert panel discussing issues from property management, property owners, and tenants alike. Our panel guests today are Gary Lee from Academy Properties, David Lawler from the Law Offices of David Lawler, and Michael McCreary from McCreary Realty Management. Next question is going to be really more for Gary and Michael. Both of you are members of NARPM, the National Association of Residential Property Managers. Mm-hmm. What would be the importance of a property management company being a part of that? And then I've got a follow-up question specifically for Michael.
Mike, do you want to take this one?
Sure. I've been a member of NARPM Atlanta since 1999, and I've been members of other property management organizations my entire career. The reality is that it sets us apart from the ordinary John Q or Jane Q agent out there, and the fact that we are setting ourselves up as experts in the industry. We're trained. We have additional level of ethical bonding that we agree to bind ourselves with. And we have the ability to network with folks and contact folks with all kinds of questions and interest. NARPM happens to run two different boards, member boards, where they can pose questions and get answers and get solutions for things.
The younger people call it a blog.
That works too. But the good news is that there's always folks out there that have done this. They've run into it. I may not have run into it yet. Gary has, vice versa. And we get to share that information, and we all benefit from that, and we help raise the level of professionalism in the industry. We all want to remove any sort of negative connotation that we get about being the rent collector or the guy that's the evictor. We want to make sure that we come across to folks as being very professional. We know what we're doing. If you do everything the way that you're supposed to do it, we're going to be fine to work with. If you don't do it, we're going to follow the agreement, and we're going to make you pay the price.
Mm-hmm. The reason why I wanted to let Mike kind of answer that is because part of NARPM, too, and part of their education, you can get different designations to go through that, and I'm actually working on one. And this is not a little program where you go to a Saturday class for 4 hours and here's your pen. This is 2 years in the making, and you have to manage so many properties for so long of a time and things like that. And Mike is actually my mentor, so if I have questions and stuff, I have to come to him, and he's got to check my package and paperwork before I can get my graduation papers, I guess you want to call it. Mike is right, though, because part of this program, too, that we're part of with NARPM, and it's not just local, it's national. You know, it's just like being, you know, a real estate agent versus a realtor, which I'm happy to say I'm part of. But if I have a referral, if I got an owner, I really know I need to have him taken care of. I can go to that website for NARPM, and there's Mike's name. I know. I don't have to question. He's going to take care of my client just like I would. Mm-hmm. And I'm safe to send him to him versus someone I'm just pulling off a website and I don't know.
Right. Gary, you just led into – thank you for the softball lead-in. For my follow-up question, which was Michael has a laundry list of alphabet letters behind his name, CPM, MPM, RPM, and GRI. Michael, tell us a little bit about what those designations mean.
Well, sure. They mean ABC. I spent a lot of money and a lot of time to acquire them. The Certified Property Manager designation, I obtained that in 1987. It's the granddaddy of all property management designations. It's offered by the Institute of Real Estate Management, which is an affiliate of the National Association of Realtors. It started the same year in 1932, so celebrating over 80 years of history, certifying, educating, and endorsing property managers now not just nationwide but worldwide. The MPM is a rather gaudy designation as far as I'm concerned because it says we're the master property managers. Yes, exactly.
It's the prettiest pin on your chest.
Out
there in Radio Land, you ought to see all the pins Mike's got on his chest. He looks like an admiral here.
Well, whenever we're doing this kind of thing, yes, whenever we attend the meetings or doing these kinds of functions, I pull them out Absolutely. Of the little box and
you
wear
should be
them.
Proud of them because it yes. took a lot to
And when you go to the airport, you have to take them all out, don't you?
Exactly, exactly. The residential management professional, the RMP, is the designation that Gary is going after right now, mm-hmm. and it's the first designation of the two, the RMP and the MPM, from NARPM. And I'm also a member of the faculty for the Institute of Real Estate Management. I teach property management courses through them, and I've just been approved by NARPM National to be on their faculty, their national faculty.
Mike, When do you actually work?
Great folks there and great technology. But yes, I still put in my 60 hours a week minimum. There's no question about that. And then the first one is the GRI is Graduate Realtors Institute. And the first 4 years I was in the business, I did sales and appraisals as well as property management. And in 1981, 82, with Jimmy Carter and 21% interest rates, it kind of convinced me that property management was a lot better than full-time real estate sales. And I think there's a lot of folks that have learned that this time around, too.
So what you're saying is that if I need to call upon an expert witness at trial, I can give you a call.
I have done that several times in the past, so I'd be glad to help you.
But you do have to pay for his time. Don't think you're not going to get away with that one.
I've apparently got quite an education I have to reimburse him for.
Yeah, there you go.
Well, that actually leads me to my next question, something, Gary, you had said earlier about the distinguishing between a property manager and a real estate agent. Mm-hmm. Cannot just any real estate agent be a property manager? You see a lot of real estate agents kind of dabbling in it, but what makes that professional different than just anybody who has a real estate license?
Well, I'm going to put it to you like this. It's kind of like swimming in the shallow end versus the deep end. Yeah, you can kind of feel the floor there in the shallow end, but when you get in that deep end, it's a whole different ballgame. And, you know, 5 years ago when I got into property management, I was a licensed broker. I still am. I did sales, you know, million-dollar sales every year, just like, you know, most agents do. They do a couple of sales. But I was very lucky. I brought in, when we started the company, two partners. And one of those was, or still is, a property manager for years, Earlene Gardner. And she's been in property management, I'm just going to say over 30 years because she don't want me to put out her age. But she's very experienced. She knows what she's doing. So I had that lifeline to kind of show me what to do and what not to do. But I do see a lot of what we call sales agents that are dabbling. And a lot of times it's like the person that don't even know real estate trying to do real estate. Mm-hmm. You're trying to do something that you're not trained for. And if you're not trained to do this, you try to dabble in it, you're going to end up screwing something up, getting someone sued, damaging property. So a lot of times if you have somebody that you want, you know, to come to property management, find someone that's going to mentor you, a Mike McCrary, an Earlene Gardner, someone that can show you the ropes. Because if you don't, you're going to end up getting hurt.
Tag on to that, probably the biggest thing that comes out of this is that real estate licensing law in Georgia, the first 75 hours of education, approximately 3 to 4 hours, is related to property management. Everything else is about title sales. And sales and mm-hmm. things like that, and the HUD 1 and all those kinds of things. And prior to NARPM, there wasn't a whole lot of continuing ed out there formalized for sales agents or any licensed agent in Georgia to be able to obtain this specialized education. And one of the things that has happened in the last few years is that the Real Estate Commission has come back and said, while your license allows you to perform these other duties, it is your obligation to learn how to do it right and be trained in it and be competent in it. And if you're not, that's a violation of your license law. So there's an awful lot of folks out there that dabble in it and get away with it, and there's an awful lot of folks that are relatives of individuals mm-hmm. who aren't licensed at all, who they leave town and mom and dad's going to take care of the house mm-hmm. for me, and mom and dad don't have an ownership in the house and they're not attorneys. Guess what? They're violating real estate license law, and it's actually a criminal act, punishable by up to a year in jail and $1,000 fine per count. And they've shut down an awful lot of folks that have been tried to come in and do scattered site management and even small multifamily management for others, even if they're not being paid a fee. So there's a whole host of ways that people can mess up getting into our sandbox. So we welcome right. all comers into the sandbox. We just want them to know what they're doing and know how to behave.
Well, and that kind of goes back to, like you were saying earlier, all the letters behind Mike's name, the A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And that's because he specializes in property management. Now, if you go into the commercial side of real estate, there's a whole different set of designations and classes and things you can take there to educate yourself to be a professional in that category, just like residential sales. You know, and even in residential sales, you get into new home construction, resale, you know, what kind of carpet needs to go in this house, blah, 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 blah. And so if you're going to get in that sandbox, you know, you got to be prepared to kick some dirt. So you got to know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Very good. Again, we're listening to Squawk Talk with our panel guests today in the field of property management. Joining us today is David Lawler from the law offices of David Lawler.
Howdy-ho.
Gary Lee from Academy Properties. And Michael McCreary from McCreary Realtors. Realty Management, excuse me. So my last topic we want to talk about today is going to be dealing in the areas of foreclosures and bankruptcies. Mm-hmm. And what is a tenant's rights that they might have if the owner is going into foreclosure? Because the tenant might be saying, well, look, I've been paying my rent. Why is this house being foreclosed on? Let's talk a little bit about what the tenant's rights are.
Well, it really depends on the day, you know, because laws seem to change every day on foreclosures.
Well, the good news is for all the residents out there, it started with the Bush administration, then the Obama administration formalized it and created a law protecting residents in rental properties if they've been foreclosed upon, allowing them to – there's a whole host of ways that they can continue to stay in the property, pay the rent, or in some cases not pay the rent, and be able to either finish out their lease or at least have a lengthy period of time to be able to make a transition. The bad news for most residents that are dealing with a for rent by owner is that more than likely any deposits that they've paid are gone with the wind. They're not going to be recoverable unless they hire David to go after that owner. And since he's lost the house in foreclosure, the odds of him having any assets are probably slim and none, and Slim's packed his bags and left town.
Yeah, exactly. That's one of the first things we do is a cost-benefit analysis on any suit. It's like, is this ghost worth chasing?
Right. And so that's one of the biggest things, and because you're dealing with people's homes, where they live, where they bring their children to, and where they
feel safe,
exactly. And then all of a sudden, that's been put in jeopardy. It gets very, very emotional, and a lot of times you almost have to just sit back and let people go through their emotional moments before you can actually convey information that they can hear. They'll always be able to understand and comprehend it, but if they can't hear it because the emotional noise is in the way, you just got to wait until that happens.
You know, Mike, you conveyed wisdom and experience in that little bit right there, because I'm so relieved and so glad that there are people out there that recognize that and they've got that level of experience and expertise, because people have got to have the moment to digest it, instead of you just throwing hard reality at them. So that was good. I liked it. I can't even make a joke about it.
Well, thank you, Dave.
Well, I'll tell you, with the tenants also, you know, if the property does go into foreclosure, you know, as a resident, you know, don't think that the owner's the enemy. They just foreclosed because they didn't like you or the property management company didn't tell you. You know, by law, you know, and correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, but, you know, we have to disclose. Find out from an owner, or we get a letter from the bank or something, that the property's going into foreclosure, we're going to turn around and let that tenant know.
Yes, you must do that.
And that resident, you know, they need to work with the property management company, because they're going to try to help you the best they can. Just like they're going to try to help the owner through this situation, they're going to work with that resident also to either, one, you know, sit down with you, go over your lease, let you know what your rights are, maybe talk with the bank with you, you know, if the bank representative come out to the property. And then worst case scenario, or even best case scenario, find you another property and help you make a move, a smooth transaction to another property. Because it's not the manager's fault, not that we're trying to pass the buck, but we don't own the house.
Right.
So, you know, and a lot of times it's not the owner's fault. It's just they got caught in a situation to where they can't get out of.
The investor could have hundreds of homes, but their whole portfolio has gone bankrupt. They just happen to have the one.
Or they could have one.
Or they could have one. They could have 10 homes that theirs is the only one that's occupied.
Right.
And they didn't accommodate for the 9 that were not.
Correct.
But the advantage, of course, that I would see of working with a property management company is what you just said, was that they would have the potential of a portfolio that they could move somewhere else.
Correct.
Or find an owner, another purchaser for the house that
right.
could help keep them in.
Well, and there's several other advantages there. The probably one of the chief things that we help potential residents understand when they're making a choice between properties is that when they work with a company that is a professional property management company, lease their property through, instead of a for rent by owner, they're getting professional level of management. They're getting access to 24 hours worth of ability to contact somebody for maintenance. You can't always do that with a for rent by owner because they're going on vacations.
Right.
They're going on weekend trips. And guess what? Air conditioners always break at 6 o'clock on Friday afternoon.
That's, right.
That's just the nature of the beast.
When it's 95 degrees.
Our sewage backs up into the house.
That always happens about Sunday at 2, just so you know.
Oh yeah.
And then when the in a foreclosure procedure or situation, the good news is in that case, when I'm managing the property, I'm being proactive, I'm helping the tenant, but also the tenant still has their deposit because
right.
it's sitting in my escrow account.
Mm-hmm.
It's not over in the owner's back pocket.
Right.
And so
yeah,
that makes a huge deal.
Yeah, that's one of the biggest things. That's one of the biggest things you see is in a for rent by owner is that while that owner is supposed to be holding that security deposit in a separate account, odds
yeah,
are
that happens. Right.
Yeah, odds are it was granite countertops in his house
right.
or something like that. It's
yes.
just it's all too often.
Our vacation.
Right.
Yeah.
The casual landlord has no idea that he has to keep that security deposit. He just thinks that when it's all done, he'll just write him a personal check for the deposit back. And that's not how it's supposed to happen.
And Atlanta is such a transient market. People have experiences in other states and experiences with other state laws, and they come here and expect it to be exactly the same. Well, I've leased 5 houses before, so your lease couldn't be that much different. I said, well, actually, it might be quite a bit different. And one of the things we do is we have a lease closing at our office in our conference room. It's just like a real estate sales closing. We sit down and we use it as an orientation session to establish excellent lines of communication and help people understand what we consider a definition of the word clean is, normal wear and tear is, what an emergency is and isn't, and also how they're going to work with us and how we're going to work with them and how we're going to communicate back and forth. And we have found that that has been an excellent way to pave the way to a successful landlord-tenant relationship. The more communication you can have up front, the greater depth of understanding you can have in the common use of the language, the better off you're going to be when you start getting into the esoteric stuff that David's a specialist in.
Let's flip the tables one more time. You've got a tenant who's going into bankruptcy. What are protections, if any, does the property management company or the owner have with a tenant that's filed for bankruptcy?
Well, every well-written lease has got a tenant bankruptcy as a default event so that if the moment they file for bankruptcy, not necessarily even discharge, but the moment they file for bankruptcy, the landlord has the right to start the eviction process. So it's really a tried and true area of contract law. It's not brain surgery or rocket science.
Well, the biggest problem that you run into is that when they file for bankruptcy and the federal court accepts it, it stays all of the lower court's actions, which includes evictions. So you still have to hire an attorney that's admitted to the federal courts. They have to go down there and go through all the hearings, and they got to get a buyer leave from the federal bankruptcy judge to enforce the lease.
Well, yeah, but getting that stay lifted is not a difficult thing. It's very administrative most of the time.
Exactly,
what we're talking about, though, is we're property managers. Mm-hmm. We're not going to do that. We're going to hire a professional attorney or someone that's jumping from bar to bar like we were talking about earlier, and they're going to take care of that. But, you know, I'll jump back a little bit and just to say it really depends, like Mike said earlier, on how that is filed, because a lot of times, even though they'll file bankruptcy, they'll exclude the lease because they know that they need a place to stay, and they know that clause is in there.
And they keep paying the rent.
Right.
And that's the real key. If they get delinquent, when we have been hit with bankruptcy filings by tenants in the past, it's almost always been as an action to prevent eviction because we're already in the midst of it for non-payment of rent. and then they buy they buy that extra time, because it can take anywhere from 6 to 8 weeks to get that order from the bankruptcy court to be able to move forward. So, and unfortunately for the property owners, if it's a $1,500 a month house, that's $50 a day gone forever that can't be recouped. And they'll talk all day long about you getting money judgments against them, but I've got several bathrooms in several houses wallpapered with money judgments because that's all they're worth. So
I'm glad that's as far as you took that.
Yeah. Can you put a picture of that bathroom up on your website? No. I would love to see that.
I get a lot more ex-residents filing for bankruptcy after I've sent their stuff to collections because they were bad residents in the first place, and they left either owing a balance where they were evicted or they've done damage to the property. So,
or a combination.
Or a combination of both. And then so they have this anywhere from a $250 judgment, which I don't know why you would file bankruptcy on that, but they did, up to $5,000 or $6,000, you know, because that owner can go after all that money for that damage, unpaid rent, for the full term of the lease. And then so they'll get that paperwork expecting to get their security deposit back. They don't get that back, so they file bankruptcy. And that's where you kind of get stuck a lot of times.
And one of the things we've been talking about is the, with this worst-case scenarios, one of the things that Gary and I and other professional managers are able to do is we're able to screen residents very thoroughly. And we pretty much eliminated the risk of renting to bad tenants or professional bad tenants down to when bad things happen to good people. That's the vast majority of when things go sideways with us.
Right.
We the great family, great couple, great individual, and then all of a sudden something bad happens in their life, particularly if it's the first time they've ever encountered something bad in their life.
Right.
They don't know how to deal with it. They kind of be the ostrich and stick their head in the sand, and they don't listen to you. They don't respond to you. And then so we have to set up everything all worst-case scenario. But the usually it's one of the partners is having an affair, divorce happens, and the marriage explodes, the lease explodes, and you know then we're left to pick up the pieces, and that's when the money judgments or at least the collection accounts occur.
Well, one of the resources that a professional management company has that Joe landlord doesn't is the ability to go get a credit report.
Mm-hmm.
Because to get a credit report, you have to go through a process of approval through the major credit reporting agencies that Joe landlord doesn't qualify for. So a credit report can go a long way. And I tell Joe landlords all the time, they go, well, he handed me a copy of his credit report. And I say, hey, I got a great word processing program too.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
exactly. But it's also much, much more people are much, much more than a credit report. Some of my best tenants have had lousy credit, but they had sparkling landlord references. Ford Motor Credit may hate them. Visa may not give them a card for 10 years, but they always paid their rent on time.
Well, those are probably exceptions, not rules as well.
I think it's more often than you think, really, seriously, because people will let that kind of stuff go, but they're going to keep the roof over their head.
Absolutely.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
And while that may not be a great credit risk for the other folks, they're perfect credit risk for us.
Right.
Well, but
as long as they make enough money and
I'm also saying is that you, as that property manager, can read that credit report better than Joe Landlord, and you can go, okay, we don't have any lates on any mortgages. We don't have any apartment companies with judgments against them, that sort of thing. You know how to read a credit report, and Joe Landlord sees a bunch of numbers.
And we're also not afraid to reject people if they don't qualify. Mm-hmm. And that is something that the average owner won't do because they're going to say, you got an honest face. You know, Kate, you have an honest face, and I know you're going to take great care of my house. Absolutely. In fact, I'm going to do one more thing. I'm going to let you rent this house from me. I'm going to cut the rent $50 a month because I know you're going to take good care of it and you're not going to cause me any problems. I've heard that conversation more than you will ever imagine. If I had a nickel for every time an owner told me that that was the conversation they had with the tenant that they're now asking me to help them get out of the house.
You could wallpaper your bathroom.
Absolutely. Another one. Another bathroom could get wallpapered.
But you know what? The thing also, too, is we're not just looking at a credit report. That's not it. I mean, a lot of times residents, you know, they'll call up saying, well, what do you look for in a credit? Well, it's not just a credit. I'm going to check with your landlord, your verification of residency, your employment verification. If you've been on your job for 20 years and your credit stinks, I might rent to you because I know I can get a garnishment through that job because you ain't moving.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But if you've been on your job for 6 months and every 6 months you change jobs, that's not going to happen.
Again, these guys are experienced in vetting that. So that, and Joe Landlord is not.
One of the things that I end a course that I do on obtaining new business is we try to be students of the psychology of the way people shop for, lease, apply for, lease, move in, and then move out of rental properties. And the better we are at knowing how the typical tenant does and doesn't, the better, the more bulletproof we can make things, both in the condition of the house, the different types of flooring to use, or whatever other things. Because the things that you would choose for your home to live in as your personal home are not necessarily what would be the best thing for a long-term rental investment. So we try to advise owners that way. But the more we know about that, the more we can reduce, put more duct tape on the floor and have fewer cracks for things to fall through.
Well, a great piece of advice I was given early on is never play a game you haven't trained for.
Exactly.
Okay? I tell people that going into court, do you think I need an attorney to go into court? Have you been trained to go into court? Don't play a game you haven't been trained for. Landlords, don't play a game you haven't been trained for. These guys are trained. They're professionals. Tons of experience. You're shooting yourself in the foot, not using it.
That's kind of why they call it practicing law, right?
Yeah, we keep practicing it, and one day we'll get it right.
Yeah, there you go.
One last thing is that people always wonder about our management fees and the costs and things. Well, you know, we can't talk about that because we don't want to get accused of doing anything illegal with the feds on price fixing and stuff like that. But the reality is that most people don't realize is that the management fees and leasing fees and other costs of taking care of the property are 100% deductible against the income of the property. Mm-hmm. And it's amazing how many of these accidental landlords that we work with end up actually becoming permanent landlords because it's all of a sudden they see it as a wealth building tool and they see it as a tax advantage, and it really is a benefit for them.
And a lot of times too, if they would hire that property manager at whatever price, a lot of times that's less money that they're going to spend rebuilding that house time the tenant, because they don't know how to screen the tenant before they go in.
Exactly. That's where the rubber meets the road.
Very good. Well, you've been listening to Squawk Talk, where we talk business to business. Special thank you again to my expert panel of guests for being on the show. As we close out again today, tell us about one more time about your company and how people could find a little bit more information. We have Gary Lee from Academy Properties.
Well, like I said before, we handle everything from I-20 in Atlanta south. We try not to go up in the north market because we're not experienced and professional in that market. But on the south side, we can handle anything from a single family house, one bedroom, one bath, to a farm. And you can reach us through our website at academyproperties.ws, or just give me a call sometime, 770-957-9550. Or David, what's your home? What's your personal number? What's your cell number?
911.
But we can handle anything from single-family residents, duplexes, quads. We do a little in commercial. We have one person that does commercial. We don't do too much because we're not professional in that matter. But we can kind of lead you in the right direction. But we can handle whatever you got.
Very good. And David Lawler from the law offices of David Lawler.
Well, I am located in Northeast Gwinnett. You can find me on the web at dlawler.com. That's DLAWLER.com. I'm at 770-904-5115. And for any property managers or realtors out there, I have got extensive real estate closing experience in the residential realm. I've closed about 15,000 properties. And so odds are I've seen the situation before. Whatever you think is unique, I've probably dealt with it. Occasionally I get something I've never seen before, like a 73-year-old woman pulling a gun on her own husband at closing. But you think I'm kidding? I got it closed.
Oh yeah.
All right.
And Mike appreciates that because that was him.
Was it at the jailhouse where the final papers were signed?
No, but ironically, I was called as a witness in their divorce hearing a year later. But you know, if you need a closing, I can get it closed.
That's great.
I love my wife.
Yeah. And final, Michael McCreary from McCreary Realty Management.
Yes, I'm Michael McCreary. You can reach me at 770-427-5711. Our website is www.mccrearyrealty.com, and that's MCCREARY realty.com. We manage single-family houses in all of Cobb and South Cherokee County. Have about 300 properties up there for almost 200 different property owners. And anything from $900 a month up, we can handle for you.
Very good. And I'm Kate Skirmerhorn with Eagle Carpet Care and Restoration, taking care of all your floor cleaning and restoration needs. To listen to this show and other Squawk Talk broadcasts, go to squawktalk.businessradiox.com. Until the next Squawk Talk, remember, when you're ready to get the job done right, set the eagle in flight.